Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week, our hosts venture off to the cinema and return with their insightful reviews on Red and It's Kind of a Funny Story, plus a special Halloween feature. And now, without further ado, here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
I'm Mr. Movie.
And I'm Mr. Film. And this week we start off with Red, in which a retired but extremely dangerous CIA trigger man is forced to leave his boringly idyllic life to clean up a mess from his storied past in Robert Schwenke's new film.
This place looks fantastic, Victoria. How'd you make the transition?
I love it here. I love the baking. I love the flower arranging.
They retire us.
You can't just flip a switch and become someone else.
What are we supposed to do?
I do take the odd contract on the side. Don't you think we ought to discuss the fact that the CIA is being used as a hit squad? And they'll do whatever they can to find us and kill us?
We're getting the band back together.
Ex-CIA assassin Bruce Willis's Frank Moses is living a life of quiet desperation, perked up only by his monthly chats with Sarah, played by Mary Louise Parker, about his retirement checks. When a CIA hit squad tries to take him out for no apparent reason, Moses goes on the run, picks up Sarah, who he has inadvertently put in harm's way, and collects a menagerie of colorful old colleagues and coots and enemies to help him sort out what's going on and save the country at the same time. All the while, the mismatched Over the Hill gang is pursued by an ambitious CIA troubleshooter. Now, if this all sounds a little comic booky, well, it should. The Summit Entertainment film is based on the popular graphic novel of the same name from DC Comics, and at times uses those comic book sensibilities to great effect. There are moments of pure brilliance, like when Willis jumps out of a moving New Orleans police cruiser to take on the troubleshooter, played by Carl Urban, and a great shootout at a municipal airport that ends with a big bang. But many of the ideas that may have worked in the panel of a comic book just don't work here. Some of the production design is over the top, and the amount and size of the ammunition that both our anti-heroes and the feds use would attract the attention of pretty much, well, everybody. But that's a quibble. The bigger problem is the convoluted story that has something to do with a CIA operation in Guatemala 20 years ago and a conspiracy that, of course, goes to the highest levels. Screenwriters John and Eric Hober have great fun taking pot shots at George W. Bush and Dick Cheney's surrogates when all the details of the conspiracy are revealed. But I have to say, I really didn't care. Like most thrillers, this 1 hour and 41 minute film is both needlessly complicated and lacking enough crosses and double crosses to make it both interesting and thoroughly engaging. Now, the actors all do seem pretty game here, with Willis doing what Willis does best, John Malkovich playing the kooky, unbalanced, explosive expert, and Helen Mirren as a treacly English dame type who knows her way around a sniper's rifle. Brian Cox shows up late in the picture as an ex-KGB Russian diplomat and seems to be having the most fun of all. I have to say that while the seniors in the group do overall a credible job, I was particularly impressed by the youngsters, Mary Louise Parker and Carl Urban. Urban in particular shows here that he could be a heck of an action hero or a bad guy. He's tough, edgy, and you can see a real underlying intelligence in everything he does. Parker takes a one-note role and has both fun with it and adds an underlying charm and toughness that I doubt was there in the script. The only misfire is with the ever-reliable Morgan Freeman. It's obvious that he really is phoning it in here, and a scene with him faking a French accent is just plain embarrassing. Yes, there are lots of explosions, and there is chemistry between the actors, but I have to say the complicated, by-the-numbers, so-what script left me a little flat. Like The Expendables, which we reviewed a few weeks ago, this picture was shooting for a B, but it missed the target for me. But just by a hair's breadth, I give it a C+.
Well, I think that's pretty good. I agree with you for the most part here. I don't know. I didn't think Mary Louise Parker, she didn't totally work for me. There was something between her and Bruce Willis that it felt more like a father-daughter kind of relationship than a real romance.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in reality, they're only like 9 or 10 years apart, which is fine. But how they're portrayed on the screen, it actually seems like it's a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of those movies that sort of throws you into a seemingly normal situation, and then some strange things start to happen, and we really don't know why or what's going on. So most of the time, we're trying to figure out just what the heck is happening, and it gets a little tiring by the time we've figured it all out.
Yeah, and you really don't care at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, some of the action and special effects here I think are well done, and I liked Helen Mirren playing against type as an ex-CIA agent. She's pretty funny when she's shooting these big guns and Uzis and whatnot.
And, yeah, she's terrific.
Yeah, and John Malkovich is well cast here. There's nothing particularly special about him, but, you know, he's always pretty good in this in his role as a guy who's had his fair share of LSD. Yeah. The plot here, I think, is pretty similar to Salt, which we reviewed earlier this summer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And this is a lot better than Salt.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, this is a comic book movie. So, you know, the level of believability, it's, you know, it's at least swallowable. What I thought was kind of interesting is that this comic book adaptation is a little more reality-based than most movies in this genre. And I found that kind of refreshing, actually. Not too over the top, and enough to deliver some laughs and some good action sequences. But still, in the end, it just felt a bit stale, perhaps because we've seen this plot unfold already earlier in the year with Salt. And I think fans of the comic book or those who like the feel of comic booky types of movies will find this worth a go. But for the rest of us, it's a little too much work to watch, and the payoff is a bit unsatisfying. Now, if this had been a summer romp and debuted before Salt did, I think it would have had a wider appeal. But Red is a little late to the game and, well, out of season. I give it a C+.
I think you're right on the money there, too. I think that's the big problem, and that's the problem with a lot of these thrillers these days. Great, great production values, but you have to have a really good story, too, in order to keep us engaged. We've seen everything. This is an old genre, and we need a new take on an old genre. So hopefully we'll get one of those one of these days.
All right, let's move right along here to It's Kind of a Funny Story, which is a PG-13 rated melancholy comedy about a teenager's experience when being evaluated in a psychiatric ward after contemplating suicide.
Sometimes I wish I had an easy answer for why I'm depressed.
Welcome to 3 North Craig, our adult psychiatric floor. Our teen floor is undergoing some renovations.
Psst. Is there a place here for people more like me?
I got all kinds of patients here, man.
Hey, Bobby.
How about a tour for our new friend Craig?
What is it you do here?
Same thing as you.
Woo-hoo. What were you doing in the emergency room?
ER has the best coffee, son.
I really don't think I belong here.
Bet you got some crazy stuff in that messed up little mind of yours.
Keir Gilchrist plays Craig, a teenager from a well-to-do family who seems to have it all going for him. He attends a top-rated school in New York, has a loving mother, if not a little overbearing, and a supportive father, if not a little out of touch. He's trying to get into a top-rated summer program and seems to be doing everything right, setting up his life for success, well, except for one thing. He's completely depressed, wants to escape from it all, and is on the verge of suicide. So he checks himself into the hospital and ends up in a psychiatric ward for evaluation. And if this sounds depressing, it is. But Craig meets several whacked-out characters, including Bobby, played by Zach Galifianakis, I think that's how you say his name.
I think that's right.
Who sort of mentors him during his stay. Now, there are some good themes touched on in this movie, dealing with issues of emotional intelligence, acceptance of oneself and others, visibility, that kind of thing. But the contrast between these and some pretty clinically crazy people who are used to dispense some of the comedy here muddies things up a bit. I liked Craig's struggle and some of his self-discoveries, but I didn't think it went deep enough. And the movie feels a little flat. There's the setup, and then we spend the rest of the time pretty much in the psych ward. We get to know the characters, but only down to a certain level in this hour-and-a-half movie. I think there's too many characters here, and I would have liked to have dug a little deeper into the inner thoughts of Craig, his struggles, and really understand them. I did enjoy his realizations, aided by his psychiatrist, by the Bobby character, and by the romantic interest Noelle, played effectively and charmingly by Emma Roberts. And I like that they put the teenagers in with the adults in the psych ward, showing that the themes here are more universal than just applying to young teens. And I liked how this melancholy movie had an uplifting tone in the end, which was nice. But it was also a little shallow. And the acting here is serviceable, nothing exceptional, and nothing we haven't seen before. It's kind of a funny story is kind of a good movie, with an emphasis on the kind of. Mr. Film, I give it a C+.
Well, Mr. Movie, I think you're being a little too kind, because this is kind of a creepy story. I really, really dislike the approach of this picture. Now, it's well made. There is no doubt about that. But the story just really irked me. This is a kid with every advantage, money, best schools, good friends, etc. And he feels depressed. Well, boo-hoo. Welcome to reality. You know, not to downplay his depression. But,
I mean, come on, that's a little harsh. I mean, even well-to-do people have problems like everybody else.
It's hard to feel a little, really terrible for this kid because he really is on the best path you can be on. I mean, look at those poor kids in Waiting for Superman. Yeah, they're positively sunny, you know, and have no reason to be compared to this.
Well, that goes to show, though, that I think depression and whatnot, like it doesn't really necessarily matter if you have necessarily, a privileged life or not.
Yeah, I'm not downplaying that. But I think it goes back to what you were saying about how shallow they approach this. I mean, this is a very shallow. His reasons for being depressed, his it just does seem very shallow.
Well, he's being pushed into a life that he doesn't want. I mean, I get that, but I wish it had gone deeper into that. It doesn't go any deeper than
that. It feels very, well, kid, you know what? We all had to fill out the form for the summer school or SAT or college or whatever. It was a little overwhelming. This is just what life is about. Now, I do have to say, though, fundamentally, I even have a bigger problem with this picture.
Okay.
And it's because it falls into the noble soul with a disease trap. Now, that's that picture that has us believe that once you develop a disease, in this case, mental illness, you have some sort of keen insights into yourself and human nature with hilarious and sometimes scary incidents to remind us that you have a disease. That in and of itself is rather depressing and not all that fun or charming. Now, just to illustrate my point, imagine the same film if the characters had, say, I don't know, leprosy. It's not very not very fun. I also think that Craig's epiphanies weren't all that interesting. Instead of being an overstressed, brilliant kid who can prattle on about Adam Smith's theories of capitalism, he's a relaxed, brilliant, talented artist who can draw and sing in a way that would put David Bowie to shame. Oh, woe is me. I mean, come on. I also think the convenient romance with Emma Roberts, who, and I have to disagree with you here, who shows here why she hasn't hit it big, had a bit of an ick sort of factor for me. I don't know. If I was trying to sort out my emotions and my life, the last thing I'd be thinking about is trying to get a girlfriend in the mental health ward.
I think that's a good point, though. Yeah.
But what made this particularly excruciating for me was Keir Gilchrist. If there's anything that's depressing about this film, it's watching this kid try to act. I have some career advice for Mr. Gilchrist. Pursue something else, anything. You're just not an actor, or at least not this kind of actor. He was just terrible.
Very oh, my flat, gosh. Very,
I thought he was terrible. Every time he was on the screen, I just wanted him to get off.
Oh, I think this is your meanest review yet, Mr. Film.
I think it is.
But I think you have a point about him here. I mean, he looks kind of like someone who could be the kid of Saturday Night Live's Fred Armisen, if you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And he kind of walks around like him, too. I mean, I thought that this guy was his son, and I went and looked it up. I don't think he is. But
no, I don't think so.
But yeah, I see your point there.
Yeah, he's pretty terrible. Now, I think that there is an interesting film that could be made about teenage depression and mental illness. And again, I'm not undercutting that is not a big issue. But this isn't it. And I think it's rather offensive that this is being marketed as a comedy. It isn't. It's a sad, depressing, boring exercise in tedium while making fun of mental illness. With all that, I am wavering on giving this a passing grade, and that's primarily because of some of the fantasy sequences and flashbacks. I think the exposition was handled expertly and rather innovatively by writer-directors Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. Here's where there's wit, imagination, and yes, even a little bit of charm, but it's not enough to offset the depressing mental illness so-called comedy stuff. So I'm giving this a D plus.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought the flashbacks were good, and they're employed throughout the movie as sort of Craig's realization periods, except for one. There was a musical number that I thought was just god-awful.
Yeah, that was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
That was pretty terrible.
You know, a lot of this movie also felt like a Zoloft commercial. Yeah. I don't know how many times they mentioned Zoloft in this movie, but there must be some product placement there. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Last week you wanted to put zombies in romantic comedies, and this week you want to put leprosy into movies about self-discovery. That's
okay. Let's that'll be the next disease of the week. Oh.
All right. Speaking of leprosy,
yes,
Halloween is coming up, Mr. Film.
Now with Halloween almost upon us, and yay, it's almost here. I know that the thoughts of many filmgoers, myself included, are turning to the macabre and scary. I love scary films. The Shining, Blair Witch, Frankenstein, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. They all give me the kind of thrill that I get when I go on a good ride at Disneyland. That adrenaline-pumping thrill that only comes from a heightened pulse and a surge of adrenaline. But more than the physical thrill, I like horror films for another reason. They're ultimately about mankind's fight against chaos and terror for a rational, livable world. Now, I think the recent spate of zombie movies really reflects our concerns that we are turning into a bunch of mindless, aimless monsters that have no purpose or goals. And if you want that illustrated in fact, just go to the grocery store on a regular basis and you'll see what I'm talking about. This has always been the overriding theory of the horror film. And I support this theory, that they often reflect either the concerns of society as a whole or the universal fears of the author or filmmaker. And those among them, possession, contagion, extinction, madness, the loss of control. That many of the heroes in modern horror films fail or die while achieving their goal or not achieving it at all isn't a strike against the genre in my mind. It just goes to show that sometimes it is worth giving up the ghost in a struggle against a supernatural or man-made evil. Now, what scares us really reflects what we value most. Someone who fears isolation will see a classic like the original Planet of the Apes, for instance, much differently than someone who is afraid of being infected by a parasite that makes them go crazy, as in 28 Days Later, or disease in general. Unfortunately, what works most against horror as a genre is that most horror films are, quite frankly, terrible. I can't tell you how many I've turned off in the last few months simply because they're completely unwatchable. Just because you put splatter on the screen doesn't mean it's scary. But the ones that work are unforgettable and will sear deep into your mind and, yes, into your very soul. While the choice of any horror film is really in the eye socket of the beholder, I will recommend a few that should get your skin crawling and heart racing. The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, one of the earliest and weirdest modern horror films, is a nightmare given form. The Shining, an offbeat take on the ghost story made by a filmmaker, Stanley Kubrick, who didn't believe in ghosts. Dawn of the Dead, or 28 Days Later, both brilliant examples of both the zombie genre and what it means to be civilized. And for those who like their horror a bit more on the realistic side, Silence of the Lambs, the first and thus far only horror film to win a Best Picture Oscar. Of course, there are dozens and dozens more, some profound, some profoundly cheesy, and some just plain fun. So if you have a choice that you'd like to share with us and with the other listeners of the Movie Film Show, email us at mail@moviefilmshow.com. We'll post the best and most interesting titles on the site. So, Mr. Movie, I know you're not a big horror film fan, but have I convinced you that they're not all bad?
To a degree. Okay. I think you make some really good points. And it's interesting to me that the reason that you like horror movies is the reason that I hate them.
Okay.
Now, when it comes to Halloween, I take it as an opportunity to poke fun at the idea of being scared or frightened, and a reminder not to take such things so seriously. So when it comes to the horror genre, I prefer movies that make light of horror, like Shaun of the Dead or Ghostbusters, or movies that are more than pure horror, you know, that have actually something to say. Silence of the Lambs you gave is a good example, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island, I think, is an interesting movie. Not my favorite. But when it comes to adrenaline and thrills, I much prefer suspense like Rear Window or, you know, things like that. Okay. Or even just, you know, tongue-in-cheek movies like the recently reviewed Piranha 3D, which I only gave a C+, but that's at least tolerable. But for me, you know, art as such and movies in particular, their purpose, I think, is to illustrate man's view of himself and his nature and role in the world and how life should be. And I just don't think life should be end of the universe, you know, end of the world kind of thing. Now, yeah. I don't take that to mean that I think all movies should be uplifting or inspiring. I mean, good movies generally are, I think, but some can be disturbing. And if it really makes you think about an idea, even if you don't agree with the movie's point of view or take on the universe, I think that makes that piece of artwork worthwhile. Take, for instance, our recent review of Never Let Me Go.
Right.
That's a very malevolent, tragic kind of horror sci-fi in a way. But it was so well executed. And this idea of art and sort of applying it back to reality, which we did on the show last week when we were talking about Waiting for Superman. So that's kind of the role of art for me. And when it comes to horror movies, and I'm talking about pure horror movies in the sense of like the Saw series and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
That embrace a view of life that man cannot survive, cannot be happy, that life is a lose-lose game, and that humanity is fundamentally evil or doomed, I just run for the hills. And the worst instance of this for me was like David Fincher's Seven, which left me so disgusted trying to show that man by his very nature is evil. I mean, it took me days to get over watching that movie. And so I really, really fear going into these kinds of things. But I don't believe that's what Halloween's about. Don't go see Seven, as I said. Halloween celebrates the unimportance of horror, I think, and is meant to laugh at it and reminds us not to take it too seriously. So go rent Shaun of the Dead. Have a good laugh. Remember that life is worth living and values are worth pursuing. And when it comes to true horror, movies whose malevolence tries to poison your soul, laugh at the very thought of even giving them a cent of your hard-earned movie-going dollars. So that's why I don't like the horror movies. I think you make some great points, though, Mr. Film, about their appeal and whatnot. And the examples you gave are movies that, while they're kind of watch-once movies, yeah, I like them, or they're interesting, they're not something that I would revisit. But, you know, maybe for Halloween, it might be worth a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's funny you talk about Shaun of the Dead, and there is this whole subgenre in horror of the comedy horror picture. Abbott and Costello made a bunch of them many years ago, Ghostbusters, etc. And I think you bring up a great point. A lot of these comic ones are a lot of fun. Bubba Hotep, I talked about a couple weeks ago, is another great picture in that regard, and actually is a very uplifting in a very kind of unusual sort of way. But I'm with you with the Saw movies and such. I think those are really, really terrible, and they are so nihilistic. So I'm with you on those real, they call them horror porn type pictures. Yeah. I think that those are really horrible. But some of the ones I talked about, I think they're worth a watch, and particularly if you want to get a little scared or have some food for thought, check them out. Check out those the comedy ones if you want to laugh at evil. And I think you can have a fun and scary Halloween.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Mr. Film and I both gave Red a C+.
And Mr. Movie gave It's Kind of a Funny Story a C+. And I gave it a D+.
Next week, we're going to take a look at Clint Eastwood's Hereafter. And we're going to visit another documentary called The Inside Job. And we'll also have another special feature, this time about legal-themed movies. Mr. Film, I know you recently had jury duty, so that should be fun to take a look at that genre.
Absolutely. And as always, visit our website regularly at www.moviefilmshow.com or subscribe to our podcast for free at iTunes. Just search The Movie Film Show.
I'll see you next week, Mr. Film.
I'll see you next show, Mr. Movie.
If this had been a summer romp and debuted before Salt did, I think it would have had a wider appeal. But Red is a little late to the game and, well, out of season.
I think you're right on the money there, too. His reasons for being depressed does seem very shallow. Boo-hoo, welcome to reality. This is just what life is about. If I was trying to sort out my emotions and my life, the last thing I'd be thinking about is trying to get a girlfriend in the mental health ward. Imagine the same film if the characters had leprosy.
Last week you wanted to put zombies in romantic comedies, and this week you want to put leprosy into movies about self-discovery. Oh, I think this is your meanest review yet, Mr. Film.
Boo-hoo! Welcome to reality.
I hate love horror scary movies. Films.